This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our December 4th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And you might think that saving and investing is all about money, but when you think about it, it's just as much about setting priorities. It's necessary to make sure that you save and invest consistently to be successful. And the way to do that is to make it a priority. And we all have various priorities, but it should always be near the top of your list. And it's about dedicating yourself to learning as much as you possibly can and controlling your spending, right? Having as much as you possibly can to invest on a regular basis. So we do our best to guide you along in that saving and investing process, hopefully point you to some resources and help you make decisions, positive decisions, the right decisions, but ultimately the rest is up to you. Making decisions is probably the hardest part. So this time of year, we tend to think more about giving to charities, maybe to help make lives better for the less fortunate. And there are many vehicles out there to help you do that. Now, have you, what about donor advised funds? These have become bigger and they're getting bigger. And in 2016, donor advised funds reached a record $23 billion in contributions. In fact, Fidelity Charitable surpassed the United Way worldwide as the largest charity in terms of funds raised. So more and more people are going this route. And one of the big things that make them so popular is how easy they are to use. And many of the larger ones, such as Fidelity Charitable, Schwab Charitable, Vanguard Charitable, have user-friendly web solutions that make donating and granting pretty easy. So proponents of donor-advised funds believe that this gives flexibility, the ability to make donations to the account and receive immediate tax benefits for doing so, while being allowed to disperse the money from accounts according to your own timetable. Have a little more control over those charitable donations, right? You can get that write-off today, but maybe it gets sent to that organization in the future. Now, there's some things to consider when figuring out how to do this, how to set it up, and answering these five questions can help you narrow down the field. One is, what are the investment minimums? So how much do you plan to contribute initially and going forward on an ongoing basis? How high are the fees associated with it? Because there are fees involved. Do the investments have reasonable costs? Certainly, in today's world, you want to avoid as many costs as you possibly can. And there's some other questions that you need to ask. But if you're planning on giving to charity before the end of the year, this may be a way, something to consider. You can read more about them on Morningstar.com. And we do have a link up there on InvestTalk.com as well to that. So time to go to our 24-hour listener line, however, and check for questions. Here's one that came in before today's Invest Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Jason. It's Antonio. Question of the day is if you could maybe touch on some of the differences, pros and cons between averaging up and averaging down. Is there certain times when you might want to do one versus the other, pros and cons and so forth? My primary method of trading is swing trading in the short term, holds. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Well, averaging up and averaging down, these basically is adding to your position. You have a current position, and it's either up and you want to add to it, and your average price will raise because you are buying at a higher price. But on the flip side, you may be down in a position, you want to average down. Now, historically, averaging down tends to be a bad idea, meaning you're putting good money after bad, you know, a down position. The positive is that a lot of sometimes you might be you might be wrong in the short term, but if you're right in the long term, it's going to be great because you're getting it at a cheaper price. I can think of a recent position that we've done for clients where we did average down, and typically we don't like to do that, but it was such a screaming buy to us that it was a great deal, and it's actually turned around, and it's even higher than our first purchase. So we did really, really well on that. Typically the smarter thing to do is averaging up, meaning you've invested, it's doing well, and you want to keep putting money in that particular direction because, you know, the trend is your friend is the old adage, right? And you were right the first time, and as long as the fundamentals of what you're seeing is still lining up, even paying a little bit more can be a good thing. So historically, it's usually better to average up than average down. It sounds counterintuitive, but that's typically the better way to go. You're a swing trader, so I think it's even more so the fact that staying with that trend is probably the smarter way to go. Now let's look at our list of topics for today. Don't panic, there's still hope, and saving to an older age does take some strategy, right? So we're going to talk about if you're over 50 and you're still behind in your savings, and frankly, most people over their 50s are, so don't feel bad. We're going to talk about three ways for you to catch up. That's our main talking point today, but we have a few others as well. One is retirement planning, six things no one typically tells you about. Some little, I don't want to say tricks, but maybe surprises that a lot of people have when they get into retirement. It kind of blindsides them a little bit. Usually not a major issue, but these are little things that tend to be, that can be very impactful if you're not aware of them. And also, tax reform was passed. I don't want to say it was passed. It was generally passed. It still has to be reconciled between the House and the Senate, but you know the passage in the Senate it gives it a lot higher odds that it'll actually be passed eventually. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then lastly, the yield curve. The yield curve has been flattening for some time now, and we're going to talk about why that's actually a good thing. The typical standard mantra is that flattening yield curve means that the economy is slowing, or it's telling us that the economy is slowing. But what does that mean for stock prices? And we're going to talk about that as well coming up on the show. So those are my main talking points, but ultimately it's what is on your mind that I want to talk about. What are you thinking about? And our goal is to answer your questions for today. Now, let's take a quick look at the market. We saw the Dow up 58, but all the other indexes were down. And you would think, well, why is the market down? You know, S&P was down 3, NASDAQ was down 72, really big sell-off in the NASDAQ. Small caps were down slightly. It was really a negative day for the market overall. And typically, you're going to say, well, that doesn't make any sense. We just had tax reform passed. It's supposed to be good for the corporations, right? Well, this is your standard buy the rumor, sell the news, right? The market's been bid up all year because of the hope of Trump reforms that are going to help business, help the economy, right? And all through the last 3-4 months, it's all been about tax reform and increasing hope that it will be passed. Well, guess what? It's basically done. And the market's selling off. And what's selling off the most? Well, the NASDAQ stocks, the growth stocks. So it's kind of a shift, and we've talked about it all year. Hasn't really happened all year until now, but we're having a shift to value stocks. And the reason is because what type of companies are going to benefit the most from lower tax rates? Well, the companies that earn the most money, especially in relation to their overall market cap. Right? Growth stocks, tech stocks. While a lot of them do make money, many still don't. So what benefit are they going to get from tax reform? Not a whole lot, right? Because they're not making money. Or if they are, it's such a low percentage increase in their earnings because of tax reform in relation to their market cap, because growth stocks are so expensive today. So that's why you're seeing NASDAQ stocks really sell off, and just the market in general. It's a buy the rumor, sell the news type of day or type of event. Now the question is, how long will the sell the news take place? Is this something that's going to be for just today? Could be a week, could be the rest of the year. I could easily see it. The market's certainly overpriced, overbought, so certainly needs to have some sort of a pullback. How much will that be? Well, is yet to be seen. So that's really the story for today. We'll still be monitoring the reconciliation between Senate and House bills, because that's certainly something that is going to be watched. But in general, the tax reform is largely behind us. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. So who gives most to charity? The best investors? The best investor is the champ. Is the champ there too? Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are the most charitable American billionaires. Buffett has given away more than $46 billion since 2000. So you have to. So if you have money, maybe you give it away. Let's work on that. Any money questions? Check in now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I wanted to call and ask about CVS Health Corp. CVS. I've been watching this stock for the last couple of weeks. I was thinking about picking up a long-term position in it. It just seemed like it was it just had really good value, pretty cheap right now. But with all the talk of this possible acquisition of Aetna, I think is the company, I'm not sure what I should do. I was about to make a purchase, and then all this news came out. Would you recommend just waiting until they either officially, you know, buy the company, or, you know, until we get an idea of what they're doing there? Or is it okay to go ahead and buy it and wait till we hear what happens with that purchase? I've never been interested in buying a company that was in the middle of making their own purchase. So hopefully I get to hear you answer this question on the podcast, and I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
All right, he's looking at CVS Health Corporation. Most people know who they are. Yield about 2.8%. They operate 9,709 pharmacy and drug stores in 49 states in D.C., Puerto Rico, and Brazil. Trading at about $71 a share, $72 billion market cap. And revenue has been on, it's still going up 4% year over year. Earnings, however, are on the decline, down 9% last quarter year over year. And I think it's positive that they are making some changes. They're certainly down because of the scare in the whole sector, the whole retail sector, and even the drug sector as a whole. So there's a lot of headwinds from potential lower drug prices. You certainly have competition from Amazon that's weighing on the whole retail sector, and it's become easier and easier to just order things from Amazon that you would typically get at a CVS. And Amazon's talking about getting into the drug distribution business. They're talking about adding pharmacies to Whole Foods, which they recently purchased. So there's a lot of what we would call secular headwinds for CVS. Now the positive is they are making changes by this Aetna acquisition. The negative is that they're doing it at a very expensive price. But it is certainly undervalued. You have an operating earnings yield of 12.6. Solid dividend, certainly payable and sustainable at a 25% cash dividend payout ratio. So I like it, even though it's in a downtrend. I like it from a long-term perspective. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. I welcome your questions at 888-99-CHART. And if you're over 50 and you're still behind in your savings, don't feel bad. It's pretty standard in today's world, right? We all focus on different things nowadays, pre-50 than we used to, and we have longer lives than typically we'd expect 20, 30, 40 years ago, right? So Being 50, I think, is kind of the new 40 in a lot of ways. So don't feel bad if you haven't saved. And in fact, 46% of baby boomers have nothing saved for retirement. Zero. And that's according to a study by Insured Retirement Institute. And less than a quarter, less than 25%, believe they have enough money to last through retirement. So don't feel bad. But there are some ways that you can catch up. And the first is to consider working a few more years. Now, I know it's not the answer that most want to hear, but just that extra few years can really go a long way when you're doing that full retirement analysis. You know, this is something we do for clients is we figure out, help them figure out when they're able to retire based on their current savings, investment strategy, expenses both today and in the future, and income both today and in the future, like Social Security, pensions, things like that. Now, just those few extra years can go a long way, and the reason is because A, Social Security increases every single year you delay taking it. So your full retirement age is 66. If you wait all the way till 70 to claim Social Security, you'll receive 132% of your monthly benefit. So for example, if your typical full benefit is $1,400 per month, which is about the average for Social Security beneficiaries, if you wait till 70, you receive $1,850. It's a big change. And obviously, the longer you work, the more you'll be able to put away in your retirement accounts rather than drawing down those expenses, right? Drawing it down for expenses, at least. So just working a few more years can really change that math in a dramatic way. So don't think that if you're working longer, it's I have to work 10 more years. It can be just a few more years can do wonders. Now, number two, take advantage of catch-up contributions. Now, whether you have a 401k, IRA, Roth IRA, it doesn't matter. In 2017, this year, savers under 50 could contribute $18,000 in their 401k, $5,500 in their IRA. Those over 50 can save an extra $6,000 in a 401k, so up to $24,000, and another grand in an IRA, $6,500. So doing those catch-up contributions can really make a big difference as well, especially when you do them year after year up until you eventually retire. And then number three is making sure that you're on the best investment path for you. And whether you put that money into a 401k or an IRA, certainly you want to take advantage of a full employer match. We always talked about that in your 401k. And you know, having something like our active 401k subscription can really help you dial in that strategy in your 401k, that asset allocation, so that you maximize that savings there. It's very, very important to do that. It's not just about the saving amount you save in that 401k, because typically that's the best part about it, is it's an automatic saver. But it's not the end-all be-all, right? It's making sure you're invested properly in that 401k account. Maybe it's a more aggressive strategy, or just having the right mix of funds ultimately, and that's what active 401k is about. And then in your IRA, you're not going to get that employer match. However, you're going to have a wider investment universe to choose from, right? If you have an IRA brokerage account, you know, we manage a lot of IRAs for clients, and that allows us to invest for income and try to compound that income over time, and that can be a big advantage as well. So making sure you're on the best investment path is step number three to getting caught up if you haven't saved enough in retirement. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, how are you doing? Long-time listener. Was just hoping that you might be able to give me a little bit of insight into CQP. Just hopefully you could take a look at the financials and let me know what you think. Thank you. Bye.
CQP, this is Chenier Energy Partners. This is a master limited partnership that owns and operates the Sabine Pass LNG terminal location in Louisiana. So this is the master limited partnership that has been all about exporting natural gas, right? We have had a natural gas boom here in the United States because of shale oil, and there's an overabundance of natural gas. It's very cheap and much cheaper than it is elsewhere. And this is a name that yields about 6.5%. Let me dig into this a little bit more. And their revenues have been going up, right? They've started to export. They're exporting about $903 million in sales each quarter. And that's up 172% year over year. But last quarter, they lost $1.10, which is really, really interesting. I'm just not a fan of this. I got to dig into it deeper, but I've never been a fan of Cheniere Energy because they've always lost a lot of money. They have a ton of debt. They're taxed differently. And I don't think that is a sustainable dividend either. So I'm not a fan of Cheniere Energy. CQP is the symbol. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give me a call.
Our InvestTalk podcast will continue next. It may be hard to believe, but the average 401k investor misses out on over $5,000 per year in investment goals. Why? Poor timing and subpar fund choices. This is the challenge with the typical 401k, and that's the whole reason for active 401k, because it's very difficult to allocate a 401k account. These plans have limited choices. People don't know what to do, and that's really what this program is designed for. The program called Active 401k, and it may be just what you needed. It ranks your current options within your current employer's plan. All you do then is log on and make the changes. You're told what to buy and what percentages and what funds. This program is offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of our InvestTalk listeners. So if you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab and look for Active 401k. Now let's get back to our podcast. This is InvestTalk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective. Include us in on your decision-making process. Talk directly with a registered investment advisor. Bring your questions to Justin right now. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to David in Cleveland. How you doing, David?
Good. How are you doing? I had a question about the stock DRH, Diamond Rock Hospitality. Okay. I bought it a while back, and I'm up about 22%. I was wondering what you guys thought about it. You think it's a good time to take profits, or do you think it's a good company, maybe buy more? I'm just wondering what you guys thought about it. Thank you.
Okay. So you're looking at Diamond Rock Hospitality, David's going to take it off air. Diamond Rock Hospitality, this is a REIT that owns, acquires, and invests in premium full-service hotels, premium urban limited-service hotels. There we go. I guess David's gone. It yields about 4.4%, and it looks like he bought it after it had a big dip. It dipped starting in mid-early part of 2015 all the way till early part of 2016 and has rallied since, kind of with the overall market, but certainly not as strong as the overall market. It's in a premium area, right? Premium area of the marketplace, which certainly gives it a higher risk, right? You're investing in premium full-service hotels. I don't know what type exactly they have, but that's certainly going to be more cyclical than the average. Interest rates have been rising. That's certainly going to be a headwind to REITs, real estate investment trusts. Now, there are some nice little tax benefits from the tax plan that is going through Congress right now for commercial real estate. Shocker, right? President Trump is big in commercial real estate, so he's done fairly well with that. And that's going to be helpful for these type of companies. Now, the big question is it cheap? Is it a good deal? And let's take a look at that right now. They do have positive cash flow. I like that. Their payout ratio is very high, but it's a REIT, right? REITs have to pay out a large percentage of their earnings, so I'm not really worried about that side. But you can go back and look at how cyclical their business was, 2009, 2010, 11, and 12. They lost money. Their earnings per share were negative in each of those years. So this is certainly going to be very cyclical. Let me look at their long-term profitability. The return on invested capital has always been very modest, between 1 and maybe 7%. Return on equity in the mid to low single digits on average over the past 10 years. I don't like that. They don't have a ton of debt, which is a good thing. Their financial leverage is only 1.7%. So it's on the safer side from that perspective, but their revenue is certainly going to rise and fall with the overall economy. Operating earnings yield is only 6%, relatively low. Free cash flow is positive, but not to the extent where their market cap of $2.25 billion is exciting. So it's not like it's trading very cheaply, to be frank, even though if you look at a PE ratio, it's only 11, but that's not really, I think, the best metric for a REIT. So I would take your profits. You get 4.4% yield. Now remember that 4.4% is, if it's held outside of a tax deferred account, you're going to be taxed on your at your ordinary income tax rate. Okay, so that's something to consider. That it's not a qualified dividend. So I would certainly take my profits, thinking you would find better yield, better risk reward scenario elsewhere. And technically on the chart, it's still kind of in a longer-term downtrend. So I would pass on that. I would pass on Diamond Rock Hospitality. Take your gains. Be happy. Maybe wait till next year, you know, first of the year, to take your full gains. If it's a taxable account, think about that, tax consequences. But certainly, I would be looking to get out of Diamond Rock Hospitality. Now, let's take a quick look at, let's talk about tax reform a little bit. It's shaping up in Congress, right? The tax reform is probably going to happen. It's just a matter of reconciling the two bills in the House and the Senate after the Senate narrowly passed it 51-49, which makes that reconciliation still a little hairy. I still think it's probably going to be passed. If you think about this, this is for corporations, and who has access to Trump? Well, corporations do, and I think if you have access to Trump and you're fairly smart, I think he's a pretty easy president to work with, because, I mean, the way I would go about it is Trump he kind of has an ego, so if you tell him how great he is, tell him how well he's doing, you're probably going to get your way. And those that have access are lobbyists, corporations, very wealthy people, you know, big donors. And they're the ones that I think are driving this tax bill. And you know, they're the ones that drive Congress in general. So it's not a shock to me that this is getting passed, because those that benefit the most are going to be large corporations. You know, the tax rate for the United States is high in relation to most mature economies. However, the effective tax rate is relatively on the low side. Not the lowest, but certainly on the low side because of the loopholes. Now, certain special interest tax provisions are being repealed. So to an extent, that is happening a little bit, but not, I think, to the extent to where it's going to make up for this drop in revenue that you're seeing. And you can see that by, you know, the deficit will explode. I think increase about $1 trillion over the next 10 years. That's certainly going to be an issue. But a 25% corporate tax rate beginning next year is going to be very helpful for a lot of firms, especially the firms that make money, that are profitable. It will help for pass-through entities. It'll help in certain ways as well, like S corporations and things like that. There'll be some ways that companies can fully expense their manufacturing and capital expenditures when they make it, as opposed to depreciating that over, you know, many, many years. So they'll be able to take that tax deduction right away. And then repatriation of overseas earnings, about 10% tax on that will be helpful for certain corporations. But I think won't be as used as much as most of the market's thinking. So that's really how you sum up the tax bill. positive overall for corporations. The standard deduction is going to rise for a lot of average Americans. So if you're not somebody who itemizes, I think this will probably benefit you. But if you're somebody who itemizes, you take your interest deduction on your mortgage and various types of deductions to lower your overall tax rate, I don't think it's probably going to be a net positive for you. It's probably going to be a net negative overall, unless you own your own business, you have a pass-through entity, like I said, that will be taxed at that lower rate as opposed to your ordinary income tax rate. So, frankly, I think it helps me personally and people like me, but I don't think it's going to help the average citizen that much. So that's kind of my take on the tax bill and where we are from here. Now, this is InvestTalk 101, and here are four free apps that could help you track your spending or savings. These have been recommended by Investopedia.com. First is BillGuard. It's a personal finance security service to track spending, protect your credit cards from fraud and errors. Then there's Check. It's an award-winning app that helps you track your bills and monitor your bank accounts and credit cards. Level Money, this is a relative newcomer to the personal finance app space, and Level Money is an award-winning app that acts as a mobile money meter so you can track your daily cash flow, which I think will be helpful for a lot of people to really clamp down on their spending. And then Mint.com, personal finance. This has been around for a long time. I use Mint. Allows you to track, build, manage your budgets and your savings and spending. And it's very helpful, at least for me. Now, do you have any apps that you want to share? I'd love to hear it. I'd love to help our audience figure out what apps help them. Now, do you have a – give us a call right now at 888-99-CHART. And you can send me a note as well by going to investtalk.com and clicking on the Contact Us button.
What can you learn about yourself by answering a handful of questions online? Well, just how much investment risk you really feel comfortable with. Take our free risk analysis quiz, and then if you'd like, KPP Financial can help you determine if your current retirement portfolio is a good match. Click on the InvestTalk tab right there on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve, Justin. This is Vincent calling from Texas. I had a question about options, and I have 48 shares that were granted to me by my company that I can execute before the 31st of January 2018. So I'm trying to read and get a little bit more understanding of what's the best approach. Do I go ahead and execute these 48 shares, or can I just hold them and transfer them over? I also have a brokerage account with some company stock that I had already bought years ago. Should I just add it to that, or do I just sell it outright? I have to make a decision. If I don't do anything and they expire, I've just lost them all. So right now the grant price is $68.75. And it looks like the stock closed today at $116.78. I do have a few more weeks to go before I have to make a decision. So that's why I'm calling, just to get a little bit more understanding to find out which way is the best opportunity to go. So I will listen for your reply or response on air. And thanks a lot. You guys do really great work, and I appreciate you.
Well, the first thing you have to consider, in, especially since you already stated that you already have shares at another brokerage account, is what percentage of that total is of your total nest egg, right? Your total assets. And we would certainly recommend that you not have more than 10% of your assets in your company stock. You see throughout history, you've seen companies that really tank, and when you're tied to your income is tied to that company as well as your retirement, it really can wipe out your entire nest egg. So you certainly want to diversify away from it. So if it's 10% or more currently of your total retirement holdings, then I would execute those options and sell them and just move that money out or into a 401k, whatever, from a tax perspective would make the most sense. And that's something you need to talk with your accountant about. I'm not sure how, if these options are in a tax-deferred account, are they just in a brokerage account that will be taxable? You need a little more detail on that, but I would talk to your accountant about that. Now, if it isn't currently larger than 10% of your overall portfolio, you can certainly execute them, transfer them to that brokerage account, and hold them. That's nothing wrong with that. You probably need some capital to do that, and you need to consider that as well, what capital you would need to execute and hold those positions, whereas if you just sell them, you can just take that money, whatever the value of those options are. There's a lot of details that I don't know, and if you like, I'd love to sit down and maybe dig into this a little bit deeper with you. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button, shoot me an email, let me know a little bit more details. We can maybe some times that we can talk and get more details on this and point you in the right direction. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about, 12 minutes left in the show, 10 minutes left in the show. So if you're going to call us, give us a call sooner rather than later. Now, let's talk about retirement planning. And it can there's the broad strokes of what your income is, what your strategy should be for your retirement assets, what your expenses are going to be. Those are kind of the broad brush strokes that really matter. But there's other ones that can matter as well, sometimes in a small way, sometimes in a big way. And there are many things that aren't apparent to the average person, and let's talk a little bit about that. Number one are required minimum distributions. We deal with this every single year with clients because we have many clients that are over the age of 70. So once you're at 70 and a half, you are required to take distributions from your IRAs or 401ks each year. And it starts relatively small when you hit 70 and a half, but they increase in percentage as you get older and older up until the age of 115 if you make it that long. Now, withdrawals from these account types are treated as taxable income, which means you owe income tax on whatever you're taking out, even if you're forced to take it out. Remember, the reason is because IRAs, 401ks are tax deferred, and eventually, government wants their money, right? Government wants their money. And this can increase your taxable income, and that exposes you to Medicare and Social Security benefit taxation as well. And it could increase your Medicare Part B costs. So that's something to consider. And then moving into Medicare, premiums can also eat up your Social Security increases. You get Social Security increases on a regular basis, but also your Medicare premiums also go up as well. Number three, it can get harder to wait out a bad market, and that's why you want to get more conservative. That's why most of our retirees are in our balanced income strategy, a moderate strategy all about income, corporate bonds, dividend paying stocks, and because it tends to be a lot less volatile than the overall market. And when you're retired, you can't deal with a bear market as easily because you're not putting more money away. So, and then lastly, there's a few other ones, but those are kind of the main things that you need to understand, and that retiring requires, sometimes you get bored, you get depressed, and you still need to fill your day with exciting things to do. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Our final segment of the hour is coming up.
Get back to your calls on Invest Talk for this Monday, December 4th. It's not only men who indulge in smack talk about women's financial skills. Many women have characterized themselves as lacking. Women investors get a bad rap. That's next time. Right now, we welcome your talking point at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Chris from Buffalo. I listen on the podcast. I have an interesting problem for me, but a problem nonetheless. I purchased Aphria, APHQF, several hundred shares in the $3 range. and it very quickly doubled. I removed all of my initial investment, and now I'm holding approximately 250 shares. So the question is, what do? I take the money and run, or do I sit and wait? This is a Canadian cannabis firm. I like the fact that the federal government is in support of it as versus the United States position. So could this be a juggernaut? I don't know. What do you think? Thanks for your help.
All right, as he said, he's looking at Aphria Incorporated. It's a Canadian company in the medical marijuana space, and they I've looked at the space a little bit, and they're one of I think my favorites in the space, and they're just because of the leading nature that they have in Canada, and if you look at the fundamentals, they're actually proving rather fast. They only did about $1 million in Canadian dollars in 2015 in sales. Trailing 12 months, they're at $22 million. So certainly rising fast. Now, they're still burning cash, negative $84 million in free cash flow, which is certainly a little worrisome, burning cash. But they seem to have they seem to not have a lot of debt. Financial leverage only 1.14, so they're not, you know, on the brink of bankruptcy or anything like that. And if you look at their profitability, that's actually improving as well. Net margins were about 5% in 2016. Trailing 12 months, they're up to 82%. Return on equity, 10%. Return on invested capital, 8.5%. Both of those not huge numbers, but both rising dramatically from 2016. So I don't dislike the company. You know, you can argue with the space that they're in, but the bottom line is I believe it's now legal in Canada and is legal in a lot of U.S. states, and I think it'll actually probably be legal nationally sometime between probably 2020, maybe 2024, somewhere in the next 10 years, I would imagine it's going to be legal nationally as more and more states make it legal. I like Aphria. I think it's, I've looked at the space, looked at different companies, public companies, and that's actually, this is actually one of probably my favorite names in the space. So I like it. Let's go to Fernando in Pittsburgh.
Hi, good afternoon.
Fernando?
I have a question regarding Owens & Minor. It seems like it's a good value, OMI.
Mm-hmm. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I own a little bit of it, and I would like to buy some more.
Let's see. Distributes branded medical and surgical supplies to healthcare providers and suppliers through 41 distribution centers. Why is this down 47.5% from its 52-week high?
I believe they're buying another company, a European company.
That's not why. Not, they wouldn't be down this much because they're buying a company. Something's wrong with their business model. Earnings are down 19% year over year. Revenues are down in the mid-single digits for the past five quarters. Earnings are down 26% year over year last quarter, 22% year before that. Yields about 5.3%, but that worries me. I know that's not why they're down that much, unless they've drastically overpaid for the company that they're looking to acquire. Something is wrong with their business model. They now have about flat free cash flow. Their debt level is rising from about 2.2 in 2011 to 3.3 this year. So not drastically rising, but certainly on the rise, which worries me. Return on equity, return on invested capital, both falling. What's wrong with their business? Do you know?
I do not.
Okay. Well, I would like to find that out, because while operating earnings yield 12.5%, which is solid, their dividend yield's 5.5%, but their payout ratio is high. Their cash dividend payout ratio is gigantic, meaning they're not making enough really to pay out that dividend from a cash flow perspective. I want to know why the stock is down so much. It's not because they purchased a company. They certainly lowered guidance in November. That was a reason. I want to know why. I need to dig in and find that out before I would buy more of Owens & Minor. Thanks for the call, Fernando. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, this Wednesday, Steve will be in San Jose for individual portfolio reviews. He has a couple spots left. So if you want to meet with him, you can do that. That's in 2 days, December 6th. So to get on the schedules, go to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and I appreciate you spending your time with us this hour. And on behalf of the whole KPP family, I thank you for listening, and let's do this again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.